Greetings and welcome. You're listening to Heart of Mind, Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and today I'm going to be sharing with you a series of interviews, so you'll be hearing the highlights, what I consider to be the best part of those interviews, because they were a bit long. But I spoke to a series of doctors who were very much connected to what's happening in the world and looking at some of the things that they can do and that we can do to contribute to our ongoing health. And first up, I'll be sharing an interview with Dr. Ken Redcross. And we had a conversation about the fears and vulnerabilities of people of color with regard to the COVID-19 virus testing, as well as potential vaccinations and why there's a history to that fear. And we also speak to the potential benefits of vitamin D to improve immune health. Dr. Ken Redcross, MD, is author of Bond, The Four Cornerstones of a Lasting and Caring Relationship with Your Doctor. He runs his own concierge personalized medical practice designed to enhance the patient-doctor relationship while providing convenient access to a full spectrum of healthcare services and holistic and wellness counseling. He joins us to discuss theories on why COVID-19 might be affecting more African Americans than any other population, including black children, who are being hospitalized at a rate 5 times higher than white children, according to the data from the CDC. Comorbidities like hypertension, diabetes, and vitamin D deficiencies are all tied to COVID-19 complications and disproportionately affect the black community. But the alarming rates at which COVID-19 is killing black Americans extends beyond these comorbidities and may be attributed to other factors such as inequitable access to testing and treatment and withholding racial ethnicity data from reports on virus outcomes. And Dr. Redcross discusses recommended health changes that can help disproportionately affected communities. So we're going to listen to this excerpt, and I'll be sharing the full interview in due time, but I thought it would be worthwhile to begin by sharing this now. I want to start out, though, however, with this lasting relationship that you're talking about with the physician, because I believe that that might be the fundamental problem.
Yeah, I
agree.
With
the African American community is that most often you'll see us going into an emergency room.
Yeah.
When we're very sick and not taking care of issues before it gets to that level. So I'm really happy to have you speak about that and how you reached that point when you wrote this book on this bond.
Thank you so much for having me on today. You know, to have a forum and a discussion about something that affects us so much, even more so than things have in the past, because what COVID really has done is just really shone a light on something that we've all known about as far as healthcare disparities now. So now it matters and we have to make it count. Now, I wrote that book so many years ago, a couple of years ago, I should say, actually, without knowing what kind of impact it was going to have as far as it being perfect now. I talked about the four cornerstones, meaning trust, respect, empathy, and communication for that relationship to be the way it needs to be. And it's even more important now with COVID-19 circulating, especially in our community, that those four things are actually mended and blended in order for us to find the right providers for us. But it's challenging. It's very difficult, as you know, because you're right. We tend to get a lot of our care at the emergency room instead of with a doctor who knows you. As I like to say, my preference actually, Catherine, is to get into the soul of the patient. And you can't do that when you're going to the emergency room each and every time.
That's very, very true. And a lot of that has to do with not having access to insurance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I also think that there's a historical lack of trust.
Absolutely.
Between the Black community and the medical profession that needs to be overcome for us to be able to feel confident going to the doctors as we should.
I agree with you. And that's very deep-seated, Catherine. I mean, there's not any one of us who aren't familiar with the Tuskegee experiment. There's even other experiments that go way back even before the Tuskegee experiment. When you're right, this has been so deep-seated almost over generations now, right? And now we have to try to unleash ourselves from that to say, you know what? Our health matters as well. How are we going to take better care of ourselves? What is the message or the messenger to make sure that we're taking care of our health? That's so key. The messenger is incredibly important, especially within our community. It's not much different than that, even in the Latino community, where once again, the messenger is incredibly important to make sure that the incentives are driven down to say that I actually care as well, and I'm here to help you.
Can you break down what COVID-19 is and how it's impacting the body?
Yeah. So everyone, when you hear about the coronavirus, COVID-19, we call it COVID-19. It was at the end of 2019. That's where the 19 part comes in. Now, coronavirus isn't necessarily new to us. That's one of the common cold viruses we get. Corona, rhino, echo, all these viruses are common. The problem with this one is that it's novel. It's a strain that we haven't seen before because it's been mixed. And we all know it came and it kind of swept over here. Now, the whole challenge with the coronavirus is that we're learning more and more about it. I mean, each and every day I update myself and I swear everybody there's something new as we're learning. We're learning mm-hmm. that, look, it just makes sense. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, Catherine, but it just makes sense to wear a mask. It's a respiratory illness, everybody. So therefore, like I say, you can fight another day. This aisle or that aisle, live first and then fight later because it's a respiratory virus. And so there's even more data that it's important to maybe even cover your eyes because that's another portal for entry. But the point is, everyone, the coronavirus is a virus that our body hasn't seen, and it's become a pandemic, meaning that obviously it's affected the whole entire world. We did a good job at the beginning because we needed to stay in to make sure that virus didn't propagate. But then we got a little antsy. I think we started to look more at a financial piece as opposed to a public health piece to be just, you know, a little tougher, but I get it. A lot of people had to go back to work. So look, this isn't an easy answer, but it does take leadership and it takes a bunch of unity to fight a pandemic. This is a public health problem, not a political one. And so that's why I say we all have to come together to figure out how we're going to attack this pandemic, because remember the last pandemic, it was almost 100 years ago. And so They had to deal with it. They even had another wave of that. But once again, you look back at those black and whites and those photos, and those folks were wearing masks in order to get rid of it. So this is the new normal that we're living in, and we're going to have to figure out what are we going to do next, especially as flu season is only around the corner as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think that here in New York, we suffered with that intense lockdown, but people seem to be doing much better now, and they are able to go about and do their things. You're sitting in outside cafes and starting to resume a normal life, where in places like Florida and Texas, they kind of hedged on their bets, and now they have really, really high numbers. So I think that that is kind of instructive to all of us, that we have to pay attention to the potential dangers that are inherent in this particular strain of the virus. So one of the things that I also understand that it packs the lungs, but it also creates blood clots in the system that can create deep thrombosis and all other kinds of problems that kick in down the road when people have in some ways not been able to stop the replication of the virus.
Yeah, you're right, Catherine. So let me do this. Let me go back a little bit, everyone. We'll do immunology 101. So we have two sort of ways that we fight infection. So an infection comes in our body, there's an innate immune system, guys. That's the thing that happens within minutes when we start to say, you know, I feel like I'm coming down with something. Our body is already sending out phagocytes and other things that actually engulf them. A little bit later on, you know, days to weeks, what happens then is what's called an acquired immunity. That's when our cells get a little smarter and say, you know, I think I'm ready for this. Have I seen it before? No, I haven't. So I'm going to start making antibodies to start trying to fight it. Those are the things that we're later starting to measure to see if that helps. So that's how our immunology works. Now, one of the problems is that we have some chemicals in our body. They're messenger chemicals. They tell the other immune cells, hey, we're fighting an infection down here. We need some reinforcements. They're called cytokines. The problem with COVID is that it can cause that system to go haywire. It can cause the system to go haywire. And when it goes haywire like that, you get a ton of inflammation, which our body does not want, because with inflammation becomes irritation of the blood vessels, clotting, that sort of thing. From the clotting, you get end organ damage, the kidneys, the liver, appendages, your fingers, your toes, some of those things. So it's that cytokine storm that is so deadly that really comes along with the coronavirus, with the way that it works in particular. Look, I've seen even other studies. They're talking about, obviously you've heard a lot about the taste and the smell that people talk about. You'll even find people who have recovered from the coronavirus, but their cognition isn't what it used to be. So this is a very unique and dangerous virus that we continue to learn about. So that's why it's important to get some education around it and to do our best to avoid getting it. And then to recognize, you know, what are we going to do, especially with our loved ones, to educate them to make sure that we're all in this fight together.
And that's really key. And the reason why I'm so grateful that you're here, because you're offering real tangible information about what people can do to help prevent the infection, what to do if they do get it, you know, what kind of nutrition do they need to be thinking about ahead of time.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've been doing, because, you know, we pick it up piecemeal. Nobody's really giving an absolute information. So, you know, I take the vitamin Z, I take the zinc, I've been taking, you know, all these different things, but is it working? I don't know. To what degree I need to rely upon that, what combination of things we need to rely upon. So,
well, let me tell you a couple of things there, Catherine, because you're right. That's a common question. Sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you, but
no,
that's a common question that patients ask. They know that there are certain things that are good for immune health. So let me tell you this. Now, we don't have a direct treatment for the coronavirus. So that's so important, because today, one of the bigger things we need to discuss as a community is vitamin D. Now, vitamin D, I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. It doesn't treat the coronavirus. That's not what we're talking about. We just understand that vitamin D is incredibly important for our immune system. Remember, I told you that immunology 101, there was one arm here, one arm there. Well, guess what? Vitamin D is important because almost every one of our immune cells have a receptor for vitamin D on them. We also have some studies that showed that acute respiratory infections may be a little bit higher in those who have profoundly decreased vitamin D levels. What's even more important is that you look at it, who has the lowest vitamin D levels in the United States? African Americans, about 82% of us, okay? And then and then behind that are Hispanic brothers and sisters, usually around 70 or so. So they're low as well. Why are we low? Vitamin D is not really that high in our diet. You have to eat fatty fish. I'm a sardine fan, so I can get a good amount out of sardines, but it's not much in your diet naturally. And then the sun is blocked by our melanin in the rays, and a lot of us are not working outside. So there's a lot of reasons behind that. But a lot of the diseases that were associated with the coronavirus that preyed upon us, in particular, lung disease, heart disease, diabetes, obesity, all of those can have states where vitamin D can be low and really play a part in your health, especially obesity, as we're learning about. So that's why I say I bring in vitamin D, because I want a challenge. I want to challenge everybody out there listening or watching this video to say, I want you to get on my level. That's the campaign I have. And my level, I'm talking about between 40 and 60 of our vitamin D level. I want it to be so that in the family, we're trying to challenge each other, because that's the sweet spot. You know, they have a website. It's called powerofd.org. I mentioned that website there, Catherine, because that allows me one more kind of helper, because I tell people to go to your doctor to get your vitamin D levels checked. But we talked about at the top of the show, that's difficult for some people. At their powerofd.org, they actually have an at-home test kit that you can order. It's a finger stick. A lot of us are familiar with that. If diabetics, you're checking your finger stick. Mm-hmm. So it's a quick finger stick. You send it in. You get your results in about a week or so. They also have a calculator on their powerofd.org website where you can calculate how much vitamin D you should be taking, and a lot of information that we need to really take in. So that's why I mentioned vitamin D should really be the hallmark of making sure that we're staying healthy and recognizing that vitamin D is not only about bone health. Now we're learning it's a lot about immune health, even our mood. Some people talk about feeling better when their vitamin D is there also. So it's important to bring some alternative ways of healing into the equation as we deal with this. There's a lot of good studies going on about vitamin D directly and that sort of thing. But we're going to make sure that we at least understand that vitamin D is important for us to get up, that it's not direct treatment. But once again, this is all supportive for us and our immune system, just in general, with flu season around the corner, as I mentioned.
The website for Dr. Red Cross is drkenredcross.com, drkenredcross.com. Also, he recommends powerofd.org, powerofd.org.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away.
And you're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and I'm sharing a series of interviews that I've done over the past couple of weeks. These are excerpts, but I wanted to get this information to you. And coming up, we're going to be hearing from Dr. Christine Horner, MD, FACS. Dr. Horner is a nationally known surgeon, author, and professional speaker, and holds two board certifications, the National Board of Surgery and the National Board of Plastic Surgery. Recognized as a leader in her field, shortly after starting her plastic and reconstructive surgery practice because she successfully ran a national campaign to pass laws requiring insurance companies to pay for breast reconstruction following mastectomy. Horner is author of Waking the Warrior Goddess and Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty. We also talk about strategies for how to uplift our health, and she has some interesting insights, and her focus primarily has been with working with people who are seniors, people who, by virtue of their age and perhaps attendant conditions, might be more vulnerable. So let's hear what she shares in this excerpt.
How they should approach this for their own life and how they manage that contact with community, with friends, with family, with children. Should we be afraid or can we find a way to be safe?
Well, you know, I think we have to be super conscientious. I mean, obviously, you know, the virus is something that's extremely dangerous. And I know both of us have lost, you know, people that are close to us, and it's still spreading, you know, like crazy. And so we really do need to take it seriously and really kind of follow all the recommendations that are given to us as far as the, you know, using a face mask. And now we know it's a particular type of face mask is, you know, better than other ones, and doing the social distancing and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's really a drag. I mean, I hate it. And it's, you know, I'm a grandmother, you know, at this point too. And it's like, well, and I live alone, you know, so it's like, well, I had to, after a couple months of doing quarantining myself, I felt insane. And it was like, okay, I've got to figure out a way where I can actually see a few friends and just call them my family members, right? Because I don't have anybody else with me. And then I'm actually seeing somebody. We hug each other, because I mean, I had nobody touching me or anything for, you know, months. And then all the things that I personally did that, you know, brought me joy and were stress relieving things, like playing tennis and doing ballroom dancing and, you know, going to the gym. I mean, all those things are gone. So it's like, wow, we are so slugged with so many difficulties on so many different layers that it's like, okay, you really need to figure out what works for you. And again, we kind of have to limit ourselves. We can't do family gatherings of, you know, 30 people or something like that. We found that that doesn't work. You know, you have to keep the group smaller and, you know, do the social distancing and that kind of thing. But, you know, really figuring out something that works for you so that you can enjoy decent mental and physical health. You know, that's the, you know, the key things. And then the other thing is just really being conscientious about all the different things that you need to do to support a healthy immune system, because people who have healthy immune systems can really avoid, you know, getting sick in the first place, or if they do, then it minimizes the symptoms that they have and the potential for bad outcomes.
Yeah. So as a boomer, as they say, and I understand that to be people between 60 and onward, mm-hmm. up towards 100 and beyond. So for people who are moderately healthy, but not really been paying attention, what should we be doing during this time? Because as long as we're being careful and safe, we can take that time to really work on building our immune system. So what strategy would you suggest for people to do that?
Sure. So having a healthy immune system really takes what I call a holistic approach. So it's not like there's just one thing, but it turns out that very much your diet and many different factors in your lifestyle, and then several different kinds of nutritional supplements that can be helpful. But there's, you know, a number of things. And I wrote a book that came out recently called Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty. And it's a guide for teaching people how to achieve extraordinary health and longevity, which is something I never learned in medical school or my residency. You know, you learn about diseases and what you can do to help to suppress the symptoms or cut things out, you know, when you're a surgeon. But I didn't really learn about health. And that's something that I learned, you know, much later, kind of on my own, about, you know, how do you actually, you know, create health? So And like I said, it turns out it's not just one thing. There's many different things that are of equal importance. So first of all, you know, our diet, as everyone knows, is crucially important. And what the research shows is that eating primarily a plant-based diet is considered the healthiest kind of food that you can eat. They're packed full of nutrients and vitamins and minerals and different kinds of plant chemicals called phytochemicals, which act like natural medicines. So the more plants we eat, the better it is. We want to avoid all the things that people usually immediately jump into wanting to eat, like as comfort foods, right? Usually those things are real bad for us, and particularly things that are, you know, refined carbohydrates and sugar and, you know, the empty calorie things. Those things really, you know, kind of kill off our immune system and, you know, cause our body to not function very well at all. So you have to really avoid that impulse, you know, to reach for those comfort foods. And then as far as lifestyle is concerned, exercising every day is important. And of course, we're challenged by that with the quarantines and so forth. And, you know, in my life, I was super, super active and played tennis 5 days a week. Well, now nobody's playing tennis, you know, in the groups. Ballroom dancing, of course, nobody can dance with anybody now, or social dancing. And, you know, going to the gym, they closed our gyms down. So it's like, well, what do you do? Well, fortunately, I'm a runner. So, you know, I can go out and run every day. But, you know, definitely walking, like the research will show that if you do 30 minutes of brisk walking a day, that gives you almost the maximum health benefits that you can get from exercise. So it doesn't require that much, but you know, that's a good thing to do, just to move your body. I actually have my sister-in-law come over and do yoga with me with YouTube videos. You know, so that's a great thing with YouTube. There's so many instructional videos on there that, and you can do classes, you know, for free, you know, in your house. So, you know, again, figuring out something that really, you know, works for you, and it's great to do something that's aerobic and also doing some strengthening, you know, kinds of exercises, which, you know, yoga can do that because you're, you know, supporting, you know, your body weight. Going to bed by 10 o'clock turns out to be incredibly important. So it turns out the number of hours that we sleep a night is important. And usually you're recommended to sleep about 7 to 8 hours a night. But then the absolute times that you go to bed and sleep are equally important. So we have hormonal fluctuations that happen throughout the day and throughout the night. Mm-hmm. If you go to bed by 10 o'clock and get up before 6 o'clock, those hormonal fluctuations are optimal. If you stay up after 10 o'clock, then they're not. And they find that if people stay up to midnight, for instance, on a regular basis, that they have twice the incidence of heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and certain cancers like breast cancer and prostate cancer, because it causes such severe hormonal imbalances. And it's not just with like estrogen, progesterone, those kinds of things. It's also insulin, which is the hormone that helps to facilitate getting glucose into our cells. It's the stress hormones, cortisol. It's our sleep hormone, melatonin. So all of those things kind of interact. And again, just going to bed before 10 o'clock, which is a super easy, inexpensive thing to do. Then that really, you know, balances your body and lowers your risks, you know, of those various different diseases, and helps to keep your immune system strong. So the thing
I have a question about that, if you don't mind. I could understand that we're talking to boomers, and this makes sense when you're at more risk with all those issues. Mm-hmm. Is this true? Going to bed at 10 o'clock would be true for younger people as well?
For everybody. Yeah, it sure is. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just kind of the learning about the rule book of what it means to be in a human body. Mm-hmm. and that's part of the rules, you know, so that's where we get these, you know, optimal, you know, hormonal balances. So mm-hmm. I know when we first did the quarantine, you know, people were like, you know, eating nonstop carbs and drinking excessively and staying up binge watching, you know, Netflix and stuff. And it's like, well, that's all the wrong things, you know, to do. And that, you know, doing a really healthy diet, which is mostly plant-based, organic, getting some exercise, going to, you know, getting decent sleep and going to bed, you know, at the proper times. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, stress is another thing that plays a huge role in our overall health. In fact, fact, the National Institutes of Health have said that 90% of all illnesses, physical and mental, have stress as one of the major, you know, key things that is contributing to it. And of course, with the COVID, I mean, the amount of stress that everybody's experiencing is just kind of off the charts.
Right.
And so ancient systems of medicine like Ayurveda, which I'm trained in and certified in, which is from India, and then traditional Chinese medicine, they recognized thousands of years ago that stress was, you know, had a major impact on increasing risk of disease. And so they created what we call effective stress reducing techniques. So that's like in Ayurveda, it's meditation. So I practice a form of meditation called transcendental meditation, which has got the most research on it. And then Tai Chi, yoga, Qigong, all of these things are meant to be practiced daily. And what they do is they will train your nervous system to not be as responsive to stress. So when you have certain stresses that hit you and you start doing these kind of, you know, simple, effective stress reducing techniques, then your body doesn't react as strongly. You don't produce as much cortisol, which is kind of the damaging stress hormone. And it cuts the damaging effects like dramatically. So for instance, with transcendental meditation, they did a study where they looked at people that were admitted to the hospital for, you know, every kind of diagnosis. And they looked at people who practiced transcendental meditation and then matched them with same kind of qualities of, you know, people in age group and so forth that didn't practice it. And they found that the people that were practicing transcendental meditation were admitted to the hospital half as often for every single diagnosis, including accidents. So basically it cuts your risk of every chronic disease in half because it's so effective at lowering your stress. So again, there's YouTube videos that can show you how to do, you know, yoga. Like I said, I do that with a YouTube video. You can learn Qigong, Tai Chi, I mean, all those things. So even, you know, in the comfort of your own house, if you don't know how to do those, you know, effective stress reducing techniques, you can learn them for free, you know, on YouTube.
Dr. Horner's website is drchristinehorner.com. drchristinehorner.com. Coming up, our last interview for today is an excerpt from a talk I had with Dr. Stephen Sinatra. And his presentation was very interesting. He fully takes the seriousness of COVID-19. But I was really happy to see that he was very optimistic about the potential outcomes and the various things that people can do to enhance their health. And he actually is very, very optimistic about the future of research with regard to stem cell therapy. Very interesting talk. Dr. Stephen Sinatra is one of the most highly respected and sought after cardiologists whose integrative approach to treating cardiovascular disease has revitalized patients with even the most advanced form of illness. Previous to working with Healthy Directions, He has more than 40 years of clinical practice, research, and study by starting his career as an attending physician at Manchester Memorial Hospital in Connecticut, where he then went on to serve as chief of cardiology, director of medical education, director of echocardiography, director of cardiac rehabilitation, and director of the weight reducing programs. Sinatra is also founder of the New England Heart Center, where he became known as one of America's top integrative cardiologists by combining conventional medical treatments for heart disease with complementary nutritional anti-aging and psychological therapies. Dr. Sinatra is a fellow of the American College of Cardiology, FACC, and American College of Nutrition, FACN, a certified nutrition specialist with the American Nutrition Association, CNS, and a certified bioenergetic psychotherapist, CBT. He is a best-selling author of more than a dozen books, including The Great Cholesterol Myth and Reversing Heart Disease Now, and a speaker and advisor for the research and development of nutritional supplements with healthy directions.
One of the things, Catherine, about this virus is that in my history of being a doctor, which is around 50 years, and I sort of treated, I would say, thousands of patients over decades in the ICU, CCU, emergency room, you know, all these, you know, acute intensive care units. And we've seen a lot of viruses. I mean, I've seen multiple viruses in my lifetime, but I'd never seen one as tenacious and as invasive as this one. Because not only does it attack the lung, it gets inside the lung, but it attacks the brain, the GI tract, the heart, the skin. So it's a multisystemic virus. It's a very, very tenacious virus. And it causes, you know, severe breakdown. And the other thing that bothers me about this virus is that even though when you get through the acute episode, you may have a problem a few weeks down the line or a few months down the line where now you get secondary organ involvement as a result of the invasive nature of the virus when it attacked not only the lung, but this virus sort of has a vascular affiliation. It gets inside what we call the endothelial cells or the vascular endothelium. So that's why it's so pervasive in the body. In other words, it's not just the heart and lungs. It's everywhere in the body, including the brain. Hemorrhages in the brain right now are a factor with this virus as well. So I'm very, very concerned about it. And in my lifetime, I don't think I've ever seen anything as horrible as this one. I'll be honest, you know.
Well, I'm glad you're being honest, because one of the frustrations that I have been experiencing are people claiming that it's not real. People claiming, you know, that it's the regular flu. And I think it's really important that people understand that while there are different levels of impact depending on a person's state of health, that this is really something that's happening to people, and there are dire consequences for many who become infected. So I really appreciate your sharing that, because I feel that people are not taking it seriously enough and then putting themselves in danger when they might not need to.
Correct.
So I think it's really important.
I totally agree. I mean, with this virus, trust me, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You know what I mean? So yeah. You really want to prevent getting it. And I think that's the key going forward.
So let's go into that prevention, what we can do. Is there a way that we can know how to preserve our heart or to recognize if we are vulnerable because of our hearts?
The way I would answer that is there's a number of comorbidities. In other words, these are people who are more at risk with the virus. So certainly anybody with any form of cardiovascular disease would be at risk. And that would be, the worst risk would be sort of an aging person in their seventh, eighth, or ninth decade of life with a history of congestive heart failure or a history of heart attack. Then going down the scale, it could be somebody in that age group with just high blood pressure. High blood pressure puts a strain on the heart as well. And there's an entity we call diastolic dysfunction of the heart, which results in the heart needing more energy to fill the heart with blood as opposed to emptying the heart. And with people with high blood pressure, they tend to get that more and more. And when you have a virus attacking the lung in the presence of high blood pressure, this puts a big strain on the heart. And that's why these people do worse. And it's important for us to realize that if we can reduce our risk factors going forward, and let me elaborate on that. For example, if you are a hypertensive person, then it behooves you to get your blood pressure down. Now, that could include taking in a lot less salt in your meals, for example. That could include a mere 5 or 10 pound weight loss. I've seen this happen over and over again, where if we can take away a few pounds of weight, our blood pressure drops. And while I'm speaking about a mere few pounds of weight loss, the other major comorbidity in this virus is diabetes. And right now in America, Catherine, there's about 100 million diabetics. This is an epidemic that is going on and on and on for years. And because we're sort of a carbohydrate sugar society, people are getting a little heavier and diabetes is something that is a major comorbidity, not only because there's more fat cells in the body with a type 2 diabetic. And remember, the fat cells, they are the home for these inflammatory cytokines. In other words, these inflammatory messages in the body, they live in fat cells. So if there's a lot more fat on a person, there's more inflammation. That's why obesity was a major risk factor in this virus. A lot of people who were grossly overweight suffered more and had more deadly outcomes than people of normal weight. Again, because the amount of inflammation in the body would skyrocket. So I think for me as a heart specialist, I think what the public needs to glean from this is that if we can eat a less carbohydrate diet, in other words, eating less sugar, if we can maybe drop 5 to 10 pounds, which we all could anyway, if we could do a little more exercise and a little more walking, for example, or cycling, if people could just do simple things in their life, just simple things, getting more sunshine. I'll tell you, Catherine, I think sunshine is awesome in this virus because vitamin D has so many great characteristics in fending off the virus. And vitamin D has so many anti-inflammatory properties that I believe simple maneuvers, and again, less sugar, more exercise, taking in a little more vitamin D. Now you can get that through sunlight or you can get it through supplementation. But I just feel if we can manage the blood pressure, manage the weight, manage our stress, more proteins in a diet, more healthy fats in a diet, less carbohydrates, less sugars. And while I'm on that, I should mention this. When people take in a lot of carbohydrates or sugar, we know, for example, that when the sugar rises in the bloodstream, and this is why a lot of diabetics get infections, sugar stifles what we call the phagocytic activity of white blood cells. In other words, it makes blood cells less effective in eradicating pathogens like bacteria and viruses. So it behooves, us to take in less sugary foods. So, from my point of view, it's the easy things that I think we got to focus on.
And you mentioned stress, and I feel that the environment that we are faced with right now is just stressing people to the max. The fear about contact, the fear about getting the virus, the concern about one's overall health and what to do about it. How impactful is stress, and what should people be doing to pull down the stress levels?
Great question. I wrote the book Heartbreak and Heart Disease about 30 years ago. It was one of my best books. where as a heart specialist, I realized that emotional stress was the most important risk factor. When you compare emotional stress to high cholesterol, I mean, emotional stress blows away high cholesterol as a risk factor for heart disease. It's much more invasive, much more indicative of acute cardiovascular events like a stroke or a heart attack or even sudden death for that matter. So reducing emotional stress in this pandemic is key. It's key. Now, how do you do that? You know, I mean, this is hard because look, people are vigilant right now, Catherine. In other words, vigilance is like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And it puts us into an uneasy mode. And then people get involved with fear and panic. And whenever that happens, our nervous system discharges hormones like cortisol or adrenaline. And those hormones are like gasoline on a fire when it comes to the immune system and emotional stress. So what can we do as individuals? Well, there's so many things we can do. If you're religious by nature, any religion, and you want to pray, prayer is good. Prayer and meditation, where if you can just sit by yourself and either focus on a mantra or I love alternative nostril breathing, where you breathe in one nostril to the count of four and let it go out through the other nostril to the count of eight and then back into the same nostril to the count of four. This attenuates what we call an overactive sympathetic nervous system. Tai Chi or yoga or Qigong or any of those movement therapies are good. And like I said, simple meditation and simple prayer, asking for forgiveness, using little sayings, you know, like I am strong, you know, just saying that to yourself, mm-hmm. or, you know, I am positive. I'm a positive person. My glass is half full. It's not half empty. And mm-hmm. if you do those little things going forward, not only will you protect your heart, but you're going to protect your immune system. And that's the key to COVID-19 is, you know, you need a strong heart because the heart's the center of the circulation. And remember, the heart and the lungs share the same circulation. So whenever you get the virus, not only is the lung affected because of what we call the ACE2 receptors, the virus locks into these receptors in the lung, but then the heart's right in the lung circulation. So that's why about 20% of people with COVID-19 can get cardiac related symptoms, you know, either short mm-hmm. on like a couple of weeks or even a few months later.
And this could potentially be true even for people who are saying they have light symptoms or, you know, they don't get to the point of being in the hospital or feeling like they're going to die from it. They go through this protracted period of illness. Do you find that those people, even though they're recovering, might end up with some kind of problems with their hearts?
Yes. However, I'm optimistic that most people who do develop an inflammation of the heart cell what we call a myocardium, most of the inflammation of the heart tends to get better on its own. For example, people might feel dreadful fatigue, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks after the virus. They may get a little swelling of the ankles. They'll have diminished heart function, but with rest and, you know, perhaps healthy eating and targeted nutritional supplements that can help improve cardiac function, most of these people will get better. Mm-hmm. They will get better. I'll tell you one thing, Catherine, as a heart specialist, I have seen many children in my life who were offered heart transplants as children, who were waiting for heart transplants. And then I would put them on various nutraceutical programs that would help drive what we call ATP, the energy of life, in a preferential direction. And I would use like coenzyme Q10 and magnesium and L-carnitine and D-ribose as a way of supporting cardiac function. And then I was amazed when a lot of these children, when they were offered heart transplants a year later, 2 years later, even as adults, they refused because they felt so good. So the heart is a remarkable organ. I'll have to tell you this. And Scandinavian researchers actually stumbled upon this about a decade ago. The research was revalidated actually in the New England Journal of Medicine in an editorial. And it goes something like this, Catherine. And this is why we all have hope. We all have hope with not only this virus, but with people with chronic cardiac conditions. Remember this, that our own intrinsic stem cells, and we've only learned this in the last 10 to 15 years, so it's really new in medicine, but we all have our own intrinsic stem cells. And these stem cells are active in our body until even the eighth and ninth decade of life. I mean, the earlier you are, the better. But if you do take in certain targeted nutritional supplements, these supplements can drive the energy in a direction that can talk to what we call messages in the body, and they turn on the intrinsic stem cells to make new cells. That's why a lot of people can regenerate their heart after a massive heart attack by considerable amounts in, you know, 2, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. It's just amazing. So as a heart specialist, I have seen people who survived under incredible circumstances and had massive heart failure and actually do well, you know, from, you know, taking certain targeted nutritional supplements that, again, drives the energy of life, that supports our own intrinsic stem cells to help renew and regenerate the heart. And I think the same thing is true of the lung going forward. And I think that even if people, you know, survive the COVID-19 or get off a ventilator and they have some severe respiratory difficulty, I'm confident that, you know, our own intrinsic stem cells can help rebuild that tissue going forward.
Dr. Sinatra's websites are drsinatra.com, that's drsinatra.com, and healthydirections.com. You're listening to Heart of Mind, Radio with the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis. On today's program, we've heard from Dr. Ken Red Cross about the fears and vulnerabilities of people of color with regard to the COVID-19 virus and the potential benefits of vitamin D to improve immune health. His website is drkenredcross.com and powerofd.org. We also spoke with Dr. Christine Horner, a nationally known surgeon, author, and professional speaker. We also speak with Dr. Christine Horner, a nationally known surgeon, author, and professional speaker. She's the award-winning author of Walking the Warrior Goddess. We spoke about how seniors and vulnerable people can navigate through the perils of modern life and how to avoid the perils of exposure to viruses and disease. Her website is drchristinehorner.com. And we spoke with Dr. Stephen Sinatra, one of the most sought-after cardiologists with an integrative approach to treating cardiovascular disease, for a conversation about COVID and heart disease, sharing some easy and revolutionary solutions to combating the problem to recover and maintain good heart health. Dr. Sinatra's website is drsinatra.com and healthydirections.com. I was very pleased with all three interviews because all of these practitioners were very uplifting and enthusiastic about the possibilities of each of us being empowered to maintain and restore our health. And some of the takeaways I took away from it were with Dr. Red Cross and him speaking of the need for vitamin D. And Dr. Christine Horner provided a real revelation with the notion that we all need to go to sleep by 10 p.m. to maintain our correct hormonal system. So burning that midnight oil may not be such a good idea when we think of our immune systems. And Dr. Sinatra, I really appreciated so much because he took the risk so seriously, but at the same time, he was so encouraging and uplifting with regard to what we can do to transform our health. And all three of these doctors recommended that we look at nutrition and having a healthy diet, that we look towards movement and exercise enough to keep our systems well lubricated and working properly, as well as the significance of meditation as a remedy for stress, with stress being really the greatest vulnerability that leads to so many of the comorbidities we've been speaking about with regard to the COVID-19 virus. So I thank all three for joining us for today's show. And I thank you for joining us. The music featured on today's program was Frog Dancing by David Anthony Clark, Ain't No Sunshine Where She's Gone by Bill Withers, All I Do by Stevie Wonder, and Dogon Beat by Catherine Davis. Find out more about my work, I'm Catherine Davis, at my website, qigongonline.net. And that is qigongonline.net. And you'll see there that I am offering a weekly Qigong movement meditation class every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. through studiomaya.com, studiomaya.com. Very, very affordable. And you'll be able to register for upcoming events for meditation, for our spiritual support group, for Qigong trainings from the beginning to the intermediate to the advanced level. So please do stay in touch. My email is heartofmindradio@gmail.com. heartofmindradio@gmail.com. Stay tuned and stay in tune with yourself. Bye for now.